Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Local literature, language, and art connect people and create community. Clatsop Community College has just published its annual edition of Rain Magazine, this one honoring Astoria's bicentennial. A special event, A River of Words, with respected Northwest authors Brian Doyle and Robert Michael Pyle, is taking place this Friday, June 3rd, at Baked Alaska. It's a benefit for Rain Magazine. Today, my guest is Clatsop Community College creative writing professor Nancy Cook, and we'll explore how and why words matter. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Donna. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Well, I have been fortunate enough to take some of your classes, so I know what kind of instructor you are, but a lot of people may not be familiar with you, Nancy Cook. Please tell us about yourself.
Okay, well, I am now 7 years in Astoria teaching at the college, and I teach creative writing, but also the required classes, composition, and some developmental writing, and then I'm the editor for the Rain Magazine class, which is the class, and let's see, I came here after 15 years in Alaska. I got my MFA at Fairbanks, and this was the first cover letter I wrote. I was somehow destined, like many of us, to end up in Astoria, and came and enjoyed my job and have a baby here now, and have the great pleasure of bringing together communities encircled around writing.
When you moved here, did you know that there was a literary culture alive here, or what did you think of Astoria?
Oh, that's funny. I actually was a good writer of my own cover letter, and I did some research before applying to Clatsop, and it was Fisher Poets Gathering when I was writing my letter. So I had a whole paragraph about how cool Fisher Poets Gathering sounded and how I'd love to serve on that committee. And of course I had worked in the fisheries, so I had that connection. But that was definitely an attraction, the notion of being able to work with young people who have a strong sense of place and a connection to their landscape through fishing or farming or whatever. And I see that every day in my classroom. It's pretty neat.
We were talking before we went on the air here a little bit earlier this morning about how writing things down makes us stop and pay attention. And whether someone's just keeping a journal, the bluebirds are back, it rained this morning. You know, it just makes you observe life in a whole different way. It makes you, you're more present.
Absolutely. And it also makes you more present to your community, I think. I love what happens in my classes when we might have a personal narrative assignment and everyone, I always make people read aloud because I believe in the power of the human voice, but also in that sense of using the writing as a form of connecting with your community, which of course is important for a writer just because you have to have a sense of your audience. But more than that, I just love these circles that happen in our classroom where people are sharing intimately. It builds not only awareness, you live more engaged in your world if you're writing about it, but it also builds compassion to understand where another human being is coming from. It's a beautiful process.
And you have students of all ages in your classes.
Oh, yeah.
And let's talk about this. I know that Carol interviewed you on Arts Live and Local last week, and you talked a little bit about the process of Rain Magazine. It's what did you say, 40 years old, Rain Magazine?
This is the 42nd edition, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
Started in 78, I believe.
And Rain is a publication. Well, let's just talk about what is Rain and what's in this year's.
Well, Rain Magazine is the literary and art publication of Clatsop Community College. It's definitely a community publication at this point. I would say it's about 40% students and faculty, and the rest are people who submit from the community. There's definitely some folks who submit every year, so there's sort of a Rain community that gathers at the reading. But then this year, we had these new voices that came out of the woodwork, and it was really fun to just meet, Adam Burke, for example, just moved here from Los Angeles after a career in film, and he happens to write poems, and we got one for Rain, and he gets to share his voice. There was a lot of new voices And a lot of amazing artwork. I have to say, I think the artwork in this year's collection is one of my favorites. The color printing, we have some Penny Treat. I know I don't want to name drop, but Royal Nebuchadnezzar and Kristen.
Well, that's
Schock
what's so great is that Rain is really eclectic. I mean, it's Robert Michael Pyle's in there, Brian Doyle's in there, and then you have people who have never perhaps written before.
Oh yeah,
and I think that one of the things I loved reading Mick Alderman's piece about the Goonies. I thought that was great. And then there's a piece about the swimmer. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, Terry Shoemaker's piece. Terry's so sweet. He didn't read it at the reading, but it's a fictional piece about a street person. I think it's funny. Both of us said this morning before the show that it made us think of our dear Helmet Man, but it's just a powerful story about a narrator interacting with a particular street person. He's actually a swimmer because they sometimes find him in his own urine on the street. That's kind of a crazy, that's where the name comes from, but it's just a very gentle
very poignant
account. Oh yeah. And the one about Bob Adamson. Did I say that right? Is it Bob Adamson? I know the work more than I know the author's names, but Adamson's piece about, it's also fiction, but visiting the Vietnam Memorial as a veteran, Bill Adamson, I'm sorry, epilogue. That, gosh, when he read that at the reading, we were all just riveted. And again, through fiction or nonfiction, this notion that somebody's careful work with words and telling a story can bring you to a place of compassion, of greater feeling. It's so easy to go through life without feeling. Maybe not for you, Donna, but even
sometimes
you can get numb. And
that you can't. I'll tell you, our culture, we live from the neck up, but we live in our heads so much and our brains, and we're supposed to be rational. We're not supposed to really show emotion. I mean, one of those examples is, I think, the spiritual churches in the South, you know, where they were singing and praying, oh, no, you're out of control. Calm down. So I think that we try to be contained in this culture. We're not wailing. We're not, you know, breaking out into dances. And I think that's harmful. So really, art and writing and music and visual and literary things, those allow us to express ourselves. And I think you're right, to access feeling.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, we were talking briefly about how, why it's supposedly notoriously hard, unless it's Fisher Poets and there's plenty of beer and song involved, to get people to turn out for literary events. I know Laura Snyder and I have talked about this, but I'm sure people are going to come to Bob and Brian. But to me, the notion that a reading is just a heady, boring thing it's so foreign, because when I go to a reading, I leave with an open heart. I leave hearing that voice, the cadence of the human voice at a reading that's been so carefully crafted. Somebody's taken their human awareness and put it into rhythm with attention. It's not boring at all, and it's not in the head. A reading comes from the heart, and I'm very optimistic that that's what's going to happen this Friday. I mean, Bob and Brian are excited to be together in Astoria. They're old buddies, and they're both just funny guys. It's not just going to be
It's going to be a fun reading. Evening. So yeah. Robert Michael Pyle and Brian Doyle, and I know that they're going to be on Carol's program this Friday, will be reading Friday night at Baked Alaska. And how do people get tickets for that?
Oh, just show up the door.
Okay.
If we fill all the seats, we'll get more.
Good.
But,
all right.
And it's actually donation. The hope is that, you know, Rain Magazine is, especially in these tight budget times, we are a patron-funded magazine in huge part. So we haven't quite broken even, and we will be accepting donations at the door. But anyone is welcome to come to hear this. What's more important is to honor these authors, honor the written word, and build our sense of literary community here in Astoria and the larger region.
I want to talk with you about Richard Roland, your interview with him in this current Rain magazine, because it's really quite fabulous. But before that, I just want to read a very short piece by Brian Doyle, which is in Rain magazine, because, again, as you talk about how it makes us stop and look at the world differently, we need to hear some beautiful words, some language here today. So this is by Brian Doyle, and it's entitled On Seeing and Being Seen by a Mink. Early one morning, by a serious river. By which I mean, you know, a river with some sprawl in it, some wet fat, a river ludicrously deeper than it seems to be. A river you can't throw a rock over, no matter how cool you think you are. A river with residents you hardly really actually see, but give you the willies when you do. Like this mink looking at me with, God bless us, a snake in its mouth. All sorts of thoughts cross my mind, and almost certainly his. And I'm sure the mink is a guy from the I'd come up there and kick your ass, but I'm busy stare, which I have received many times in life. I think about having snakes for breakfast, and about how a mink is mostly a mussel, and how the river must savor many mink, and what the local geese think about all this, and what the mink thinks of a mammal with glasses, sipping coffee on the bench. Probably I'd come up there and kick your ass, but I'm busy. But you never know, and I think this is the point of the lesson this morning, and every blessed morning, yes, there are many mink, and we just never know. I just thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, and the notion, I mean, we all have mink moments in life, right? Hopefully we do. Maybe we get too busy to have them. But we all have moments where life kind of startles us alert, right? But look what Brian's done. He's taken that mink, and he's memorialized it. He's taken that moment and made it
wake up,
sort
pay
of
attention,
permanent,
wake up,
and he shared it with the community. I mean, it's really a way of writing is a way of honoring the world and honoring what still exists in the magic of this world.
That's well said. That's wonderful, Nancy.
I love that little poem too. And aren't we lucky to have it? I mean, Brian Doyle is in Best American Essays, which is like, he is a really up and coming writer, but he's so generous. You know, the way I got to know Doyle was actually because he publishes Portland's University's alumni magazine. He's taken the notion of alumni magazine and made it into this incredible craft.
It's not just a boring piece of here.
Heck no. It's great. Widely respected. And at any rate, I just started taking our Rain students there as sort of a literary publishing opportunity. And he just welcomed us, and we got up the nerve to ask him if he'd give us a poem. And now he sends us poems every year. And he's like, talk to Bob. I'd like to do a reading. And so there is this strong sense. It's amazing what a strong sense of community there is within the writers of our nation, especially the environmental writers. Sometimes I think that they are such a source of wisdom in our world. They're like these, they're not preachers exactly, but they are leaders in a spiritual sense, and encouraging a sense of conservation and awareness. And of course, Brian is a spiritual writer. He works for a Catholic university. He's very Catholic. His new novel, I'm right in the middle of it, but it really explores both traditional cultures. There's a Salish woman in there, but then there's this old Irish Catholic, and it deals a lot with their worldview. And he's been published a number of times in the Best Spiritual Writing.
I didn't realize that.
So, yeah.
And we're going to talk about Richard Roland in just a minute.
Oh,
if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns on KMUN 91.9. I'm your host, Donna Quinn, and my guest today is Clatsop Community College writing professor Nancy Cook. And she has arranged for this wonderful event, A River of Words, taking place this Friday, June 3rd at Baked Alaska. She's also the editor of Rain Magazine, and we've been talking about some of the essays, the poems, the art that are in this year's publication, which is available throughout Astoria for a donation, I believe. You just can find. I saw some actually at the Blue Scorcher the other day.
Yep.
And the co-op. And the Astoria co-op. So, and Richard Roland is one of my heroes. He's an artist who has been lauded for his dragon kiln and for all that he does. I think of him, though, as a shaman. And and it's hard to pin him down because he's not verbal. He's so in another realm and dimension, it seems like. I just feel like he's a very enlightened person. And you did an interview with him, and he had an ant project. Well, let's talk just a teeny bit about that, because I think that's very interesting. I think people would find that fascinating.
Okay. Wow. It was such a challenge to actually craft this piece, because talking about somebody's work that has the depth of Richard's work is, it's almost dangerous. You know, you don't want to name it or cheapen it, or he works so
or label
intuitively
it in any way. Right.
From the heart. So my presence here interpreting this is actually part of the tension of the piece. And Richard is really, really good about recognizing the role of the poet. You know, he has his long-standing relationship with Barry Lopez, and he really embraces writers as on a being on a path along with him. But the way this piece came about, that's a precursor. Read the whole piece and then still recognize that what Richard does is beyond what I can name. But I've still made my best stab. This is something I've been at for about 5 to 7 years, thinking about what happens at the Dragon Kiln. That place is very special to me. You talked about me coming
now,
here.
Now, if someone doesn't know about Richard Roland and the Dragon Kiln, maybe we should just give just a quick, brief overview of what is a Dragon Kiln and who is Richard
Roland. Okay. If you're listening, Richard, I hope I do well. The Dragon Kiln is a traditional Japanese wood-fired kiln, but the title of my piece is Neo-Traditional Art, and certainly at the Astoria Dragon Kiln, Richard and the wider community has made it their own. But the kiln's been there for more than 20 years, and there's a community of wood-fired potters who fire it for 5 to 7 days. And have you ever been to the fire?
I have not, and I've wanted to, and I've many times. I will do it eventually.
It's so amazing. And I've taken his class and participated in firings, but I also just really value what happens in that community, even if I don't have any work there. So that's what happened. I was out there the Saturday after New Year's this year, because they'd had a big New Year's firing. And one of the really special times is when they unload the kiln. It's like a kind of birth to see what's come out of there.
Because you don't know what's going to come. Because you put in
all
different kinds of things, like these things from ant rocks or something from Eastern Oregon. You put in different things, and then you don't know what the pots are going to look like.
Right. And actually, I'd say one of the hallmarks of wood-fired pottery, and especially Richard's process, is sometimes intention is subverted. So you sort of relinquish your work to what it's going to happen to it when it's in the fire and in the liminal place of the fire. But at any rate, I'm there when these particular pots come out. I call them the ant pots or the ant vessels. And I'm always moved by Richard's work, but I was so deeply affected by these particular pieces that came out that I became curious with this process. He is using ant rock in a glaze. I think he's still doing it, although you never know with Richard. He moves right on to the next thing really quickly. I know right now he's so involved with thinking about Yoshida's work. But at any rate, he, on some of the Women Resources bowls and this New Year's firing, he collected this ant glaze he collected ant rock from a dome in Eastern Oregon, a place that he felt a deep connection to. But there was a lot of obsidian in the ant rock. So the ants had basically sorted the obsidian from the landscape. And he's fascinated with obsidian. He's generally so reverent and fascinated with materials. One of my favorite Richard Roland quotes is, "Life's too short not to experiment with natural materials." But to me, this notion that he would enter into a kind of collaboration with the ants. And then we have to think about ants. I mean, they are this powerful organism. They're known as a eusocial organism. And actually, if you read my piece or even think about it, you should certainly read Richard's poem, which is called In the Service of the Queen. And right from the title, it alludes to this notion that ants live in a different reality than us, right? They live truly in the community. I'm not a biologist, but this idea that everyone does their work within the community. Okay, so Richard's collaborated with these ants, which is pretty magical. And I just want to talk about that and honor it. But of course, our conversation, I prefer to call it a conversation than an interview. Our conversation goes many places. And I'm not sure. Do you want me to read a little bit?
Well, there's
from
just
this?
A little piece where he talks about what the role of the artist is, what okay. he thinks the role of and writers, visual artists, you know, musicians. What does he say about what their real role is?
Okay, well, it sort of begins. We're talking about what is the proper use for these pots, because the artist makes the pots, but the community still has to fulfill the responsibility of responding to. My feeling is that some of these objects are sacred. But does our culture know how to use sacred objects? Okay, so I say, expressing reverence has always been one of the roles of human consciousness. But I wonder how our culture actively celebrates that anymore. This is me. And then Richard responds, through the poet, and through the writer, and through the artist, and through the conviction of responsibility. I believe that is the role of the artist. That is the role of the artist, I ask, to keep the interaction with the spirit world alive. Would you say that? Yes. So, and I jump in here a lot, but I say, so the artist and the poet are a kind of shaman? Yes, says Richard. And then he laughs, as only Richard can laugh. Whether they know it or not, that's important. You think it doesn't matter if they, the artist or writer, know that they're performing this role? Richard, I don't think it matters. I think you just have to express from the heart. You have to write the poem. That's the act. That's the moment.
That's beautiful. And Richard's one of my heroes here locally. The other thing that I want to say that I really value about you, Nancy Cook, is that when you are teaching your students, everyone has something to say. And a lot of people think, oh, artists or writers, they're these people who wear black all the time. And they're obviously very gifted. And I don't have that ability. But you know what? If you're listening to this and you just pick up a pencil and say, you know, outside my window, the sky is silver. You're a writer. I mean, come on. You know what? You document things. You witness things. You like to use that word, witnessing. So writing is healing. It's a way to witness your life. It's a way to be part of community. I mean, and I think that we just need to be aware that some people might say, oh, this is some, you know, ivory tower academicians. This is a lofty thing. It's not. It's accessible. Writing is one of the things that's accessible to all of us.
Right. And that is the beauty of RAIN in my mind. It's very inclusive. I mean, we had two gals who I assume are in high school read the other night, you know. So there's all levels of writers who make it in with their best try. This competition was stiff this year, but I think particularly with the student selection committee, one of the things that happens with RAIN is that pieces that make that direct connection are really valued in a way they might not be valued in some hotty-totty literary magazine. This notion, if you're expressing the community. So we have somebody talking about what it is to live by the beach, you know, or another woman speaking of The River is Her Mother, Miranda Rinks's essay. I think it's probably the first time she's been published, but she just writes this piece about living on the banks of the Columbia, and it resonates. So being present is as important as experience and skill.
And conversation. You said that, I mean, writing generates ideas and conversation, and that's a really valuable thing. And I worry that our young people are not able to actually converse in the way that they used to, because, you know, we're not having dinner together as families. And reading, I mean, if you just at night, maybe you just read one thing at your dinner table and then you talk about it or something. Maybe something like that. I mean, what can we do to help people appreciate and wake up that little writer inside them?
Yeah, I agree. I'm coming out of teaching argumentative writing and I'm so struck. Argumentative writing is simple. Point and counterpoint. It's so important to consider the counter argument, which again is compassion. If you're going to have dialogue with somebody, you have to be able to stand in their shoes, feel what they think, and respond to it openly. And that's what my writers are doing in this classic composition class. But it's empowering to see it happen because we don't see it very often in our culture. You know, so much of political debate is really not good argument. But you force somebody to write a, not force them, you encourage someone to write an essay that really includes that structure and that compassion and that careful thought. And I think writing is key for helping people to live as engaged citizens, not only in the political sense, but also in what you're all about, Donna, being present. Writing does play a role in helping people be present to their community.
Yeah, slowing down enough to really pay attention to that robin that's singing or the little egg that fell, you know, all of those things that we are in a hurry and we all want to slow down. It's a tribal thing. It's ancestral. I think it's something within our DNA.
Oh, yeah.
And we only have a couple more minutes here, Nancy. So tell us, what is it that you would like the listening audience to know as we close?
Well, I hope you go out and find a Rain magazine, because that's the point. The community needs to respond to the poems. And so I hope people find Rain and read it for the heartfelt expression that is there in the pages. And I know for myself, going to readings is so important. Most of the time I write a poem, it's because I listen to someone speak from the heart and the channel is open. So I just hope that we prove that you can do a literary event in Astoria. And Bob and Brian are going to be fun. Come on out, 6:30, Baked Alaska.
Friday night, 6:30, Robert Michael Powell, Brian Doyle.
A river of words.
A river of words. Come be part of the river. Get into the flow of it. Thank you so much, Nancy Cook, for all the good things that you do. And I think we could have many conversations about why words matter in our world, how we say things, why we say things. And thank you for all the good work you do here.
And thank you, Donna, for all the good work you do.
And Terry Wilson, who's coughing, unfortunately, over here. Are you okay, Terry? Okay. All right. Terry Wilson is our engineer extraordinaire. And I also want to thank local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself. Today, take a deep breath. With gratitude for all the good things in your life, and focus on those good things and expand them. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now, in this moment, on the amazing planet we call Earth.